So welcome to another in the Moments of Light podcast series. And today I'm absolutely thrilled to be talking with Gary Plunkett, who is a wisdom keeper, a healer, a shaman, a teacher, and dare I say also a shovel giver. So welcome, Gary.
Aloha, Tom. How are you?
Oh, that's a very good sense. And that's given us that aloha has given us a bit of a clue about one of the things we want to talk about today. We want to talk about light bulb moments, but in the context of, I guess, what would you call Huna? Would you call it a discipline? Would you call it a wisdom?
It's a tradition. In one sense, it's indigenous traditional wisdom and life view and way of life.
Yeah.
Or you could call it a if you wanted to NLPize it and make it into a system, then you could call it a systemic thinking set that empowers and inspires and enlightens.
Okay, so could we give, just for people that don't know Huna, could we use the light bulb moment then as a way of exploring it? In my terms, in my phraseology, a light bulb moment is that sort of idea that comes in fully formed. So you get the whole picture, but you get it in less than a second. Was it apocryphally that when Newton had one about the theory of gravity, it took him the rest of his life to write it down? So do those sort of moments happen in a Huna kind of context?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, there is a concept that is exactly that, which says that humans are what happens between the in-breath and the out-breath. And without breath, we are nothing. Therefore, the more breath we do, the more power and energy we gain, or what the Hawaiians call mana, which is their word for energy or chi.
Right.
And you gain energy through breathing. And if you breathe properly, as they would see it, you energize yourself massively and bring on these enlightening light bulb moments that you're talking about.
Okay, and then do they come in then, the still points between the in and the out breath?
Yeah, well, just breathing on its own is a fabulous meditation.
Yeah,
and the Hawaiians have a special way of doing that, which may be familiar to some of our listeners here, because it's simply breathing in through the nose,
mm-hmm.
and out through the mouth for twice as long.
Oh, the ha breath.
And it's called a ha breath because that's the noise that you make as you breathe out. It's really, really, really simple.
Or the aha breath.
Yeah. So an aha breath in your terminology. Yes, exactly. So
fabulous. So all this stuff that has been known about for years, you know, and the light bulb moment, obviously we call it a light bulb moment, but before we had light bulbs, it must have been called something different.
Yeah, the candle moment.
Something going on, yes, or the in-breath moment, or the still point moment.
Mm.
So simply then, the breath is the generator, or the thing that stirs it all up.
Yes, but the breath is the engine that gets things going and then keeps them going.
Right. But, you know, you must have experienced this, and I've been there, where you've had an idea, done nothing with it, and then a couple of years later, you've seen someone else has done it, and you think, oh, that was my idea, I had that idea 2 years ago, but someone else has done it really, really well. In the Huna tradition, is there also a method or methodology for grounding ideas and making sure they actually manifest into physical reality?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. The principles of Huna, as you might call it, are about that energy flows where attention goes, and that you put your, where you take action is where you get results, and that the concept of just ideas is a different kind of way of thinking. I'm just trying to think what the Hawaiian is for that. It's kind of a different line. You might call it philosophy,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to practicality. And the Hawaiians are very, very keen on practicality. They have a principle which says that effectiveness is the measure of truth. So in other words, if someone has some words or a theory or a hypothesis, unless it is factual and practical and can be used, then it's of no use whatsoever and they will discard it. So they're not into things for you know, thoughts for their own purpose. They're also not into why questions, because what they say is if you keep asking why, eventually you're going to ask why God, at which point that's unknowable, and therefore you've just wasted your time. So they're very much more into how, and how do things work, and how are we doing things. So even if we're getting something in our lives we don't want, they will ask you how you've done that, so on the assumption that everything is down to you.
Gotcha. So if you want to be an ideas generator and an ideas maker, if you like, as someone that forms these ideas into physical space, a good question to ask of somebody that's doing that is, how are they doing it, and to model them.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And the Hawaiians walk in both worlds, as they would call it, which means they walk in the material world and they walk in the spiritual world, or the world of other realms, as we might call it. Mm-hmm. So they're walking in the ideas realm and they're walking in the practical realm at the same time. And they even have techniques to do that, one of which is called hakalau, which means to focus and defocus at the same time. And this is really simple, because it essentially requires you to stare at the wall until such time as the wall starts to stare back, as it were.
Oh, I love it.
And so you look at the wall. So the way you do this is very simple. You choose a spot above your eye line and you look up comfortably, and then you stare for a while, and then what happens is that your awareness gradually expands, and slowly, slowly, slowly over time, your awareness comes all the way out to your peripheral vision, where you can see what's going on in your peripheral vision, mm-hmm. and you can still see the original spot on the wall. And gradually, this awareness goes all the way around behind you, so that you have a sense of what's going on. It's kind of like the phrase we have, which is, you know, people have eyes in the back of their head.
Oh, yes.
Well, this is actually how you do it, because from a Hawaiian perspective, we don't really see through our eyes, although we think that we do because that's the viewpoint that we get. But actually, we're sensing, and everything is about vibration, and we have certain vibrations that resonate, that come through our eyes, mm-hmm. and other vibrations that come through other senses. And this hakalau sense that we're creating, the Hawaiians call it the moving meditation of the kahuna being the wise person or healer. And when you have your awareness all the way around you, it's really powerful for being aware of everything in your world. So if you're in a village, let's say, you know where your kids are, you know where everyone else in the village is. If you're out in the wilds, you know where your companions are, you know where sources of danger may be, because your senses are heightened. So this is what people call the sixth sense,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually the ability to tune into what the Hawaiians might call other world, but in here we're talking about ideas world. So you tune into the world of ideas and you call up the world of ideas, or the desk of ideas, or the trolley, or however you want to see the ideas come to you. And you just go out and pick some. So maybe you have a garden of ideas and lots of wonderful flowers, and you just decide what you want to have your idea about, and then go and find it in the garden. So you're doing that in your imagination, but the Hawaiians massively value imagination and intuition over intellect. And because your unconscious self, what they would call ku, is aware of everything, but your conscious mind, what they would call your lono, your inner self, your consciousness, is actually inside your body and doesn't have any awareness of what's going on outside.
Well, that's fascinating. So I've been reading a book by a guy called Ian McGilchrist called The Master and His Emissary about left and right brain current theory, and it seems that slowly the neuroscientists are coming to these similar kind of conclusions, but you know, obviously with millions of pounds worth of MRI scanners and tests and research to prove this all the stuff that the Hawaiians have known for thousands of years, and it appears that our two sides of our brains, our left brain sits in space and time, and our right brain sits everywhere and everywhere, everywhen else.
Yes.
Which is kind of similar sort of thing, isn't it? Which is great that we've got this convergence between science and, well, I won't call it spirituality, honestly, but I think it's just being.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people call it spiritual wisdom, but it's really the wisdom of consciousness, which is the wisdom of everything, if you like.
Yeah.
So wisdom is applied knowledge, and if it doesn't work, the Hawaiians don't count it. So
yeah. And so that's what you're referring to the people that often of a spiritual persuasion just get involved with spirituality for its own sake, which doesn't often take you where you want to go or deliver any real world results.
Well, that's right, and the Hawaiians are very big on results, and they say, you know, it's all very well to be spiritual, sat in a cave chanting Om, but actually you don't gain a lot from that, because you're not going to gain many learning adventures where you have challenges to face and deal with when you're sat in a cave. You'll have a lot more of them if you go and mix with all the other humans, because as we know, people are infinitely variable, and whatever challenges our soul wants us to have, there'll be a person who can provide that.
Fabulous. Well, it sounded like I should have been born in Hawaii, because I just like the philosophy, and it sort of sits with my own personal philosophy very well.
Mm. So, yes, exactly.
So when did you get into all of this stuff, Gary? Was Huna something you fell into early in life, or...?
No, it's relatively recently. I would say that my kind of tipping point came when I started learning NLP, and I only did that from a... I was very much steeped in corporate tradition, so I used to run a multi-million pound department with 200 staff and in big corporate banking world in IT, and being what you might call a typical banker in that sense, I wanted to know why other people were wrong. Because obviously it couldn't be me, could it? And I discovered to my surprise that maybe I was actually wrong, or at the very least had a very incomplete understanding of the world and how people did things.
Mm-hmm.
And in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So because I began to understand a little bit about people and not just the funny grey boxes that is IT, I got promoted very rapidly and therefore thought, ooh, this NLP stuff's very good. And the people who were teaching me NLP also talked about this thing called Huna, which they described as the spiritual side of NLP, because it has a very, very similar ethos and principles that if it works, it's Huna. Mm-hmm. Whereas in NLP, they say if it works, it's NLP. So NLP is about modeling what works. And because Huna is about what works, the two are very similar, because their principles are all based on practical reality and having an effect, not just being theory-oriented. So I went over to Hawaii on the basis that if I went to Hawaii to learn this stuff, the worst that could happen would be that I was in Hawaii for 2 weeks, and that's quite a good downside, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there, and at first I didn't really get it, and I would say that a lot of my stuff came up because what it does is it challenges you to take responsibility for yourself 100%, and that was a new concept to me, which I kind of fought against for a while until eventually I realized there wasn't any other way of moving forward. So I started to learn Huna. And then I started to realize that Huna in and of itself wasn't the whole story of what the Hawaiians understood the world to be. And actually, there's a lot more to Hawaiian traditions and wisdom than Huna tells us. Huna's kind of the dumbed-down version for white folks to understand. Because we have such a limited worldview that they kind of have to start at the beginning and just give us some tidbits in order to start the ball rolling, if you like, and then you gradually deepen your understanding and realize there's an awful lot more going on, and that the people who first arrived, the missionaries and etc., first arrived in Hawaii, the problem they had was that the Hawaiians were far more advanced than they were.
Got you. So was it through this process of learning Huna and the bits beyond when you kind of emerged into being a wisdom keeper and shaman? Or do you think that that was an innate thing that's in all of us, and it's just effectively really switching the light on that makes us into what we're all capable of being?
Well, I'd say it's almost like switching on a different coloured light.
Yeah.
So that you're there in the white light and everything seems black and white, and then all of a sudden you switch on the blue light and the red light and the green light and the yellow light, and all of a sudden you have a rainbow and you have color instead of black and white, and you start to see not just shades of gray, but actually all of the whole color palette in front of you, or spectrum that allows you to have infinite variations. So you start to realize that you're a lot more multidimensional than you realized, and you start to realize there's more to life than just corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all about material things and money. There's actually far more things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And even just understanding how the world works takes some doing, because although science has done a great job as far as it's gone, it hasn't gone very far. And, you know, we kind of live in a culture that thinks that the current population of humanity is the most advanced there's ever been on the planet, when actually there's a lot of evidence to suggest that we're just one of several civilizations that's ever existed here.
Exactly. We're not that smart. If as a planet we owe each other 10 times more than the actual amount of money on the planet, that's not very clever at all, is it?
well, that's how banking works.
Yeah.
And it's something that I knew a long time ago when I was at university and studied monetary economics. And it's possible to create seven times the amount of debt than you have assets.
Yeah.
And that's how banking works. But the thing is that actually, it's all illusion, because you know, having worked in IT in a bank, I can tell you that your bank account is just electrons whizzing around a computer in Scotland somewhere.
Yes.
So, or wherever it is, and actually your bank account doesn't exist, because electrons are blinking in and out of existence in any given moment.
And the seven times of the debt that's been created on top of your bank account and every other asset on the planet doesn't exist.
Yes.
Wonderful.
It's all a myth. I mean, Iceland has dropped out of the economic system, and they've got themselves back to normal in about 6 months.
Yeah.
And if Greece, you know, I do hope Greece do the same, and the Italians and everybody else, and all these people who think they own the world will suddenly realize that they own empty space, because these electrons don't exist.
Wonderful. And how does that tie into the Hawaiian system of existence?
So their approach is very much a nature oriented one, that everything has awareness. So although not necessarily the same type of awareness that we have, but that everything has life. Mm-hmm. So even a plastic chair has life.
Yeah,
it may have a lot less life than a wooden chair.
Mm-hmm.
Which has a lot less life than a living tree.
Mm-hmm.
But everything has some level of awareness and sentience, but not at the same level that we have. But we are part of that, and our role as the pinnacle of the tree, if you like, in many senses, is to be stewards and look after those things that we found.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hawaiian approach is very similar to Native American, that they look seven generations ahead when they're making decisions about how to go forward.
for sure, yeah. Because if you knew that you had to come back to this planet, you want to look after it, wouldn't you?
Exactly, and the Hawaiians have a very different approach to life and death than is traditional in the kind of Western Christian thinking that thinks we only have one life and therefore you do as much as you can with it in the time you have.
Mm-hmm.
The Hawaiian approach is very much just, oh, well, we'll just have a change of address.
Okay, yeah, all with it.
So you have a change of address and, you know, as one lady said to me, you know, her mother was on the phone, you know, every day of her life, and as soon as she died, she was there with her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a change of address as far as they're concerned. You die, you know, you live, you die, you live, you die, you live, you die. It's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't put such a big emphasis on it as we do, and that they have a lot more understanding of it and what it means and how to go about that. The process of dying as well, and not seeing it as some big curse, but actually it's just a normal part of living.
But to me, what you're describing just seems like it's just common sense and it's the way things are. So why is Huna and this whole philosophy kind of so small? When in my view, what you've been talking about, it should be the major world movement. I'm not going to use the word religious or spiritual, but it should be the way the whole planet thinks.
Well, the interesting thing is that it's been banned as until 1989. So okay. This was all suppressed. There was actually, in the US, there's actually a Native Religious Freedoms Act, which, of course, was all about removing freedoms.
Okay.
And that was only fully repealed in 1989.
Nice.
And that applied to Native American traditions as well as in mm-hmm. Hawaii. And there were additional things in Hawaii as well. So my teacher's teacher was actually arrested in the 1960s for chanting.
Blimey.
So there was a huge effort to get rid of this whole culture in the 1950s when Hawaii became a state in the USA.
Right.
And one of my teachers, Uncle George Naope, he set up something called the Murray Monarch Hula Festival, which was a competition between hula groups to practice and celebrate hula dancing and singing and chanting and all that kind of thing. And at first they really struggled to get people to go to it because there weren't enough groups, and now the whole thing is exploding and there are lots and lots of hula groups all over Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact all over the USA as well. With people practicing the culture, and as more and more people get into the culture, these teachings are starting to come out, because up until 1989, basically only white people would teach it because otherwise they would get arrested. And so it's taken 20 years for the indigenous population to decide to teach it themselves and not have white people teaching a kind of the not quite right version.
Wonderful. So, but if people want to learn a bit about it, we're speaking to each other in the UK at the moment, are you planning to run any courses or workshops over the coming months?
Yes, there's quite a lot happening. I've been invited to speak and do workshops in quite a few places. So I have a workshop coming up at the end of February in Essex,
mm-hmm.
one at the end of March in Preston.
Right.
One in the middle of May in Devon, and then other ones in Preston, and in 2011 I've got ones coming up in Yorkshire, Scotland and Preston. And I'm also talking to people about running ones in Oslo and Toronto and Salt Lake City. So there's all kinds of possibilities for anyone who's interested to tune into this kind of thing and light up their light bulbs with some Hawaiian huna.
Wonderful. At those events, you'll be handing out shovels aplenty.
Well, we all need a bit of a shovel to shovel our proverbial manure in our lives and get rid of it as quickly as we can. And I tend to think of the Hawaiian system as having kind of earth mover sized shovels. so you get to get rid of a lot more stuff a lot more quickly and a lot more easily.
Fabulous. So, Gary, thanks so much for shedding light on light bulb moments and then the Huna variety. It sounds like this stuff that we're dealing with is pretty universal. And actually, I think one of the reasons that maybe it has been suppressed is because in the wrong hands it can be used for all sorts of nefarious outcomes. But in the right hands, we can do some wonderful things with it. So it's nice that those that know or in the know have guarded this wisdom, and it's now leaking out into where it needs to be. So how can people best get hold of you?
So the best way for people to get hold of me at the moment is I have a WordPress blog, so it's alohagary.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And also on Facebook, if they look for a page, Aloha Gary, or a page which is UKHUNA, UKHUNA, they will find me there. So, or they can search on Ho'oponopono, or HUNA, HUNA, or Aloha, or Gary Plunkett indeed. And I also have a business website, garyplunkett.com, if anyone wants to find me for any business reasons too.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I'll make sure some of those links go below this this podcast. So thanks, great to talk to you, Gary. And my sense this is the first of many chats, so look forward to the next one.
That'd be fabulous. Thank you very much. Ahui ho, until next time.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye.